Hello, good morning, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Transition-aged youth are individuals generally between 13 and 23 years old and are often with mental health challenges who are transitioning from child-serving systems to adult-serving systems. A lot of psychological and social development occurs during this time. It's also a time when serious mental health disorders are often first discovered. Research shows that early treatment significantly decreases hospitalization and increases participation in school and employment. Many resources are now available in our Alaskan community. Some of these are the Power Center and Alaska Seeds of Change. Today, on Line One, we'll be finding out more about these resources and plenty more with Joshua Arvidson and Quavon Bracken. Please call us toll-free statewide 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. You can also email me during the program at line1@alaskapublic.org. Joshua and Quavon, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start with you, Joshua. I want to give you the opportunity to let our listeners know who you are, where you came from, how you got interested in this field, what's your position now. Please feel free to share with our listeners all about yourself.
Well, good morning, Dr. Clark. It's great to be here. My name is Joshua Arvidson. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. And I got into the mental health field because I wanted to find a way to be part of my community and make a difference. And I've been in the field for about 25 years now. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And I've been with Alaska Behavioral Health for just over 20 years. So 20 years in 1 month. So I love the work. I love the clients that we serve and the team that I get to work with. I originally came to the organization as a kind of a brand new clinician 20 years ago. And after 3 years working at the organization, worked with a team to start the Alaska Child Trauma Center. And I managed that for 15 years. And we still have the Alaska Child Trauma Center. And then I transitioned to different roles in the organization. And for the last about 9 months, I've been the chief operating officer there. And I get to work with folks like Quavon, who's here today, and a really awesome team. So I really enjoy it. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's certainly, you've seen a lot over the last 20 years, a lot of change. Yeah. Probably in practice, practice styles and information out there, plus just resources. And I know Alaska Behavioral Health has grown quite a bit during that time. So thank you for being here today. Quavon, I'd like to give you an opportunity as well to introduce yourself. You can let the listeners know what you do in our community, and welcome to Line One.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Clark. So my name is Quavon Bracken, and I haven't been with Alaska Behavioral Health nearly as long as Josh has been, but I think it feels pretty long for me. 8 years. I started working here when I was 17 years old. I started with their program, the Power Center, and originally, joining the Power Center, I learned a little bit about the program and just like how to help youth around me, and as a youth not really having any experience or knowing about any beneficial resources out there, I was unable to help any of the people that I knew that were struggling and that were actively homeless or actively dealing with addiction. And through that program, I ended up learning about a lot of different things, learning about a bunch of different resources in town, and then just building a lot of rapport with some of the youth that are transitioning youth that frequent downtown. And over the years, I became the program manager, and I've been here ever since. So.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being here today. Let's start off with some definitions and kind of get the ground rules or lay the land for what we're going to be discussing today. The term transition-aged youth, or abbreviated TAY. That's a new term for me, so I had to kind of look it up through the website and whatnot. But why don't you guys, and we can start with either one of you, Quavon or Joshua, like maybe define for our listeners what transition-age youth are and why do we call them that? Who would be best for that, Joshua?
Both of us can jump in on that, I think. I'll talk a little bit about it from that age range from a mental health perspective and why we focus on transition-age youth and mental health systems. So it's sort of interesting, you know, in our in our society, you know, you're a child when you're 17 and you're an adult when you're 18, but you know as a physician that 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds biologically and developmentally are very similar, right? And so we have this idea that there's children and adults and sort of an illegal construct, but in a developmental or biological perspective, you know, we're growing and going through rapid change in that age range. But because of that distinction between children and adults kind of in society, systems are often kind of designed for kids, like pediatric systems, and then there's adult systems. And this age range, 13 to 23, 14 to 24, sometimes they don't really get well served in either of those systems. They're in a pediatric clinic. They feel like this is really for younger kids. You know, I'm 17 or 19. And then in adult systems, they're maybe surrounded by people who are at a different stage of life and going through different things. And so one of the things that's really interesting, I'm really interested in data and how data can kind of drive, you know, our practice and help us be better as healthcare professionals. And transition age youth are historically a bit of a missing population in behavioral health systems. Hmm. You have like a double bell curve distribution in your age range in mental health systems. When you're 10 or 12 and things are really not going well for you and you're maybe having debilitating anxiety and haven't left your bedroom for 2 days, your parents are going to bring you in for help. And that's a good thing. When you're 30 or 40 and you have things that are going on in your life and things aren't working well, you may bring yourself in for services. But that transition age youth population often is missing when you look at systems, you know, the people served by behavioral health systems. It should be the other way around because that's such a key time of life, key for brain development, key for your social development. Just so much is happening. I mean, you think about what happened between the age of 14 to 24, that decade, it makes 35 to 45 look like nothing in terms of change often in people's lives, right, development. And so it's a key time to intervene. And so what we've been doing at Alaska Behavioral Health, and this is part of a trend that is starting to take off nationally, is designing systems specifically for this age range. Even though some are legally adults, some are legally children, this transition age youth population, if you design programs specifically for them, you can engage them. And that's what we've seen. We were serving about 100 youth in this age range 4 or 5 years ago. And this, just since July 1st, we've served 809 transition age youth at our organization. So an 800% increase. And we're not even like close to the end of a full, we run on a, you know, July 1 to June 30 calendar. So we'll see a 1,000% increase in the services that we provide to this population over the last 4 or 5 years. And that's because we've designed programs specifically for them. If you design the programs specifically for them, they will use them and make benefit from them. So, yeah, I could go on and on. I'm really excited about this population. But Quavon actually runs one of our really important transition age youth programs. So I'll pass to him. But
sure. Quavon, any kind of thoughts for our listeners in addition to what Josh mentioned? Joshua, about transition age youth.
Yeah, I feel like Josh, you know, really like hit all the really important parts about what transition age youth are. You know, he went within the spectrum of showing that like how they're transitioning and developing, and some of them are not being met the same way as some of the youth that are within like the younger range, and then some of the people that are adults and just able to, you know, like go where they need to go. I don't feel like I have any more really to add to that because I feel like Josh did say a lot of important stuff on that matter.
Well, let me ask you, Quavon, like what is it? I mean, obviously a lot happens during these ages and what happens to a 13-year-old is very different than what happens to a 23-year-old. But why do you think this age group happens to be so vulnerable?
Yeah, so from what I've seen, you know, here working at the Power Center, from all the way from downtown all the way to our new spot here, I've seen a lot of the youth that have come in and have just had less support, you know, less support from responsible adults. A lot of the youth that we see are at risk to being homeless. Some of them have grown up on the streets, you know, whether their parents, you know, had addictions, or if their parents were already homeless, or they got kicked out of their houses. But yeah, a lot of them are actively facing homelessness, actively facing addiction, and they get kind of stuck in street families because they don't have that familial support, you know, anywhere else or any other responsible adult. And then the cycle kind of repeats itself. And a lot of them have maybe untreated mental health and behavioral health issues as well. And they have a real adverse reaction to adults that try to like become some sort of authority in their life. Especially when they've been homeless and kicked out by police and other people that are authorities. And so they're facing a lot of different things out there. But some of the, you know, the main hardline focuses are homelessness, addiction, and then untreated mental health.
Good, good, good. So Joshua, I don't want to focus yet exactly or specifically on what you guys are offering or what the resources are in a community, but in a general, very broad sense, you know, nationwide or in your opinion, like what are the services that transition age youth really, you know, benefit from?
Yeah. So, as Quavon was saying, you know, there's kind of a whole spectrum. So like, some youth are facing, you know, really, really disrupted environments and family situations and need, you know, really concrete assistance, you know, with things like housing and access to food and shelter and those sorts of things. And then kind of the, on the other end of the spectrum, what we've really learned as research around mental health has improved over the last 20 years is that mental health conditions are more common than people think. Depending on which data you look at, somewhere close to half of people will experience a mental health condition at some point in their life. But when we look at how mental health conditions progress when they first emerge, what we've discovered is that the majority of mental health conditions that emerge in someone's life, the first episode of that mental health condition or the first signs of those mental health conditions actually happen in this 14 to 24, 13 to 23 year old age range. And there's a lot of emerging science around, and you know this as a physician, that there's really almost no physical or mental health condition that gets better if you just wait it out. It's just not how health works. The earlier you intervene in the progression of really any mental illness or physical illness, the better the outcomes. And when we think about that, you can think about that in the progression of a particular health condition. But if you think about that developmentally, the earlier you can get help for a mental health condition, the better your outcomes. And so what systems are doing nationwide are really trying to work upstream more and spot mental health conditions earlier and get treatment to folks earlier. And that's the biggest trend with transition age youth is this early identification and the recognition that if you identify mental health conditions early, treatment often can be pretty brief and pretty successful. I mean, the most common condition we treat is depression. 92% of our clients have a reduction in symptoms after they start treatment. So anywhere in healthcare, 92% success rate is pretty
amazing.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So those are some of the bigger national trends around transition age youth and mental health.
Okay. Just want to give our listeners our call-in. If you have questions for Joshua or Quavon today, statewide, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433, or email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. So let me just take a step back from my own knowledge or from a physiologic standpoint. Why is it during this age range that these things pop up? I mean, I can think of a couple potential reasons, like, you know, puberty or hormones or you know, a transition in home life into adulthood. Like what do you guys see on a ground level basis as to like why is it happening now?
Yeah, Quavon, do you want to jump in first on that?
I think you should I think you can handle this one.
Okay, sounds good. So So you kind of you hinted at some of the, I think, the key factors there, right, is there's a lot that's going on biologically for human beings in this age range. You're really going from the kind of onset of puberty to early adulthood. There's a lot of brain development that's happening, a lot of hormonal changes, physiological changes. So the human physiology is just going through dramatic growth in this phase. And so if that creates lots of opportunities. I mean, you think about, you know, what a human being looks like when they're 13 and an athlete, for example, and what they can look like when they're 23. There's a lot of opportunities there. But along with those opportunities come some vulnerabilities or challenges. So if you're struggling, like with anxiety, for example, as you're going through those physiological changes, those can be a stressor. Then you look in the environment, you know, in this age range, you're going from, you know, at the beginning of this age range, being an elementary school student to at the age of 23, potentially being a college student or a parent even, mm-hmm. right? And so that's a huge change in what the demands are you from your family, your system, society, et cetera. And so that can be a stressor as well. And so I think those both things that are going on for folks biologically in terms of growing and developing, and then those rapid changes in your social environment. You think about your family system, you know, when you're an elementary school kid, and then at the end of this age range, you're potentially a parent yourself. That is a lot of change to manage in a decade of life. And so I think all those things kind of contribute to the fact that if you're going to experience some mental health challenges, it's pretty likely that if they're going to start, they're going to start in this age range. That's not a bad thing. It just means that that's the time we want to start looking at providing help to folks.
Yeah, that's the target. And certainly, I imagine the tools that you have when you're 13, you know, to manage depression, anxiety, or family home life are so different than when you're 23 or 43 even, you know, learning those tools to manage your stress and anxiety.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think about this even in my own life, like I experienced a lot of anxiety when I was a kid, and the tools that I have to deal with that, you know, 30 years down the road are just much more well-developed. I mean, things just don't bother me the way they did when I was 15. And I don't think that that's unusual. I think a lot of us feel that, just, you know, everything's kind of new at that age. And it can be a stressful time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let me ask you this, and then we'll take a short break, get to some calls as well. And either Quavon or Joshua, feel free to tackle this one. But we mentioned that intervention early is incredibly important for the success of treating these episodes. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your first episode, kind of psychosis, specialty clinic.
Yeah. So this is really exciting. So, you know, when we're talking about what are trends in the field, you know, we treat a whole range of folks with everything from mild to moderate depression, anxiety, all the way to really significant mental illnesses like schizophrenia, for example. And serious mental illnesses that involve psychosis, hallucinations, delusions, paranoia, et cetera, can be very debilitating for folks. What has been discovered, though, is there is an approach to care where you provide intervention very early, you detect these conditions very early and provide wraparound coordinated care, can really change the trajectory of serious mental illness for folks. And this model actually was developed in the Commonwealth countries. So it was originally developed in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, about 15 years ago. And this model called FEP, First Episode Psychosis, or Coordinated Specialty Care, about half of the folks who develop a serious mental illness, it first emerges in this transition age youth age range. And it can be terrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can imagine, you know, hearing voices that aren't there or seeing things that aren't there when you're 15 years old or 17 years old. It's terrifying for the individual. It's terrifying for the family. Mm-hmm. Folks often don't know what to do. And what this coordinated specialty care model uses really three things. Therapies that are really evidence supported for treating initial onset of a psychotic disorder. Really good medical psychiatric care, and there's been huge advances in psychiatry. I'm not a physician myself, but we have a really good team of medical providers who are specialists in treating psychosis. And then the third component, and hopefully Quavon can jump in on this, is peer support. And that's where you we employ a dozen folks at our organization who've been through serious mental illness themselves and are recovered and in recovery. And so they can sit down with someone who is experiencing psychosis and say, I know exactly what that's like. I've been through that myself. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And here are some of the steps that were helpful for me. And really, you know, in addition to providing treatment, really stand alongside the person experiencing that. And that peer support component is kind of the really important third component of that approach. And so we're launching. So Alaska is just one of the first states in the country to start to launch first episode psychosis coordinated specialty care models, and our organization's doing that. But I was hoping maybe Quavon could talk a little bit about that peer support component and how important that is.
Yeah, Quavon, can you chime in there?
Yeah. So, peer support. Right now, over at the Power Center, we have one peer support specialist. And so our whole approach at the Power Center is peer-to-peer interaction. And I was hoping to actually get into it when we talk about the Power Center, but I can talk about it now as well. And that is, like, having youth of a similar demographic or having youth that experience similar things as the youth that we serve, whether it's addiction, homelessness, you know, and then we pretty much like have those youth connect with another youth, and they find that it is much easier to open up to someone that has probably experienced something similar to them than some adult that goes up to them and probably acts like an authority figure over them. And we've had a lot of success in just like having people that come into the center and they didn't really know anyone, didn't really want to talk about anything. And then connecting, and just they were able to build rapport with some of the youth that are here. And also through building rapport, we're able to figure out like what those needs are. So if they were just someone that was homeless and they've been sleeping out under a tree, you know, behind a store for a little bit, connecting with that person, building that rapport has helped us figure out that need and be able to connect them with another program or agency. Where they're able to have a warm bed, you know, for the night.
Absolutely. That's great. So we're going to take a quick mid-break here, and then we're going to get to some of the calls. Just wanted to remind our listeners, you are listening to Line 1, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us statewide, 888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After this short break, we'll continue our discussion on mental health and resources for transition-aged youth with Joshua Arvidson and Quavon Bracken.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Joshua Arvidson and Quavon Bracken, and we are discussing mental health resources in Alaska for transition-aged youths, age 13 to 23. Do you have questions about the Power Center, Alaska Seeds of Change, or other resources? Call us toll-free statewide. 888-353-5752, 888-353-5752 in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so let's go to our first caller here. Ethel is calling from Sterling, Alaska. Welcome to Line 1. Ethel, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Ethel, what can we answer for you today?
Thank you for the scope and depth of the subject first, but it seems to me that the quality and the ability of services that teenagers can acquire depends largely upon the region they're in. I know family members who are raising teenagers who are in foster care and who are between 12 and 15 and 16 years old and who have been reared in emotionally and abusive homes to the extent that they are removed from those homes, and for whom the foster parents need at least a couple of years to determine exactly what it is they're dealing with, and feeling a huge sigh of relief when one sibling goes into their freshman year in high school, and the younger child stays in a lower grade at the appropriate level, and then trying to parcel out, okay, what does each child need, and what is it that we're dealing with here, and then feeling all kinds of frustrations at the inability of the state of Alaska or tribal agencies to help you navigate their needs and how to appropriately respond to them as a foster parent.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of frustrating because the need is so much greater than the level of services that are out there. Thank you.
Ethel, thank you. A couple of questions we'll have you take the answer off here. So, but for Josh and Quavon, it looks like a couple things we can jump off with this question are going to be location and in areas of service availability, issues with foster care, and then I forgot what I was going to say on the last thing there. But why don't we start with you, Joshua, about location, what's kind of available out there?
Absolutely. So, our organization has six clinic locations in Anchorage and Fairbanks, and we're opening a new clinic in Wasilla here in the next 3 months. So that'll be exciting. I know the caller noted she was from the Kenai Peninsula, from Sterling. One of the things that we've really increased our capacity, we had to because of the pandemic, is our ability to do telehealth. And so we can serve youth anywhere in Alaska via telehealth. There are some limitations to telehealth. Some youth really prefer their services to be in person, and we realize that's a barrier. But we while we're located in Anchorage and Fairbanks and soon in the Mat-Su, our service area is all of Alaska, so folks can get services with us. For youth involved in the foster care system, we do operate the Alaska Child Trauma Center, so we have some experience, about 15 years of experience working with folks involved in the foster care system. I'll say, based on my career, that it is a very distressed system in Alaska. It's very challenging, a lot of challenges, as the caller pointed out. And as a mental health provider, we can be one part of a better response to the needs of youth. But as the caller acknowledged, it's a system that has a lot of challenges, and we all know that as Alaskans that there are a lot of challenges in that system. So,
yeah, and I think that's true of everywhere. I mean, it's a challenging system in and of itself, the foster care system. And then you guys are a private agency, but I know that there's also state resources, or also she mentioned native resources. What's the interplay between all of those?
Yeah, so you have the State Office of Children's Services, which is the Child Protection Agency. Often when folks come to us with concerns, we also point out that children involved in that system should have a guardian ad litem, which is an advocate that works in a different part of the state. So they can often advocate for youth in a slightly different way as they navigate the legal processes. So those are two resources that we always direct folks back to. And Alaska does have a really robust tribal health system that is a big resource throughout the state, and particularly in rural communities. So those are some of the pieces. And then us as a mental health provider have some specialization in working with children who've been through traumatic experiences. So we can be part of that mix. But those are some of the pieces. But it is a very challenging system, and I have tremendous respect for foster parents and folks who open up their homes to Alaskan kids who are in difficult situations, because it's a huge commitment, and I'm very proud that there are thousands of Alaskan families who are willing to do that.
No, absolutely. Let's take a call here from Heather from, I think, Mountain View. Heather, are you with us here on line one?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can. What's your question today?
Hey, I guess the question is geared toward...
Getting some feedback. If you want to turn off your radio there.
Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I guess this question is for Josh. So I was curious if you could talk about how your organization approaches serving individuals who have co-occurring intellectual or developmental disabilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great question, Heather. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So with co-occurring intellectual disability, so co-occurring can mean the existence of two things at the same time in the same person, right? So sometimes folks say co-occurring, they mean mental health and substance use disorder. The cause question is about co-occurring mental health and then a developmental or intellectual condition. So Our focus as a mental health provider is we serve folks who have a mental health condition, but they can also experience an intellectual or a developmental condition. One of the challenges that I think the question kind of hints at is when systems are developed, you might have like a mental health system and then a system for developmental disabilities, for example, and you develop these systems around these challenges that folks experience, but that's not how people work. you don't always fit into a box or into a, you know, people are complicated. And so what we see is in the folks that we serve, I would guess 10 to 15% of both the children and adults that we serve in our organization have a co-occurring intellectual or developmental condition that they're also dealing with. And I could get into a lot of details of what that looks like specifically in therapy, mm-hmm. but what it means is you take a non-wrong door approach. So if you're coming in and you have a mental health condition and something else going on in your life, we're gonna serve you. We may link you to resources if you need extra supports in those other parts of your life, but we also take the whole person into account. So just to give you an example, if I'm working with someone who has anxiety and also is experiencing an autistic spectrum disorder, I'm gonna take that into account as I'm working on treatment. I'm gonna pay special attention to things like sensory stimulation in the environment. What are the triggers for anxiety? Recognizing that those like sensory sensitivities and the anxiety that you're experiencing are woven together because they're both occurring in the same person. And so we're going to try to take that into account. I think this is an emerging area in our field. You know, we build these systems around specific conditions, but that's not really how life works. Human beings are complicated. And most folks have more than one thing going on in their life. And so we're trying to just get better at that.
Yeah. Oh, great answer. Thank you. And we have a call coming, Kristen from Anchor Point. Welcome to line one.
Thank you. I was wondering, since they just passed the new spending bill in Congress in Washington, and it has drastic cuts in payments to Medicaid, the states, how can people advocate to try to keep these programs going, because whenever there's cuts to Medicaid, it's always, you know, mental health programs for children who are not really, really sick but need help in certain ways. Just basically the marginal people who aren't quite all the way over the edge, their kind of programs get cut. First of all, how can we save programs like you so Medicaid can cover them? And second of all, what does the mental health groups, do you advocate to try to get more money from the government? Because this doesn't sound cheap. This sounds like somebody along the line has to pay. And if you're not very rich and you've just had your children tax thing cut and the Medicaid cut and certain other things that have been cut for people, how do we go about protecting these programs and protecting our children?
Yeah, thank you, Kristen. Thank you for the kind of an overview kind of question there, forest through the trees, so to speak. I'll pose this to Joshua. I think as your role as COO is probably a good one for you, and how funding fits into all of these programs you guys offer.
Yeah, so it sounds like the caller has a really, really robust understanding of how impactful Medicaid is, for example, for Alaskans. So I would just say a couple things. As the caller kind of pointed out there, and a lot of Alaskans aren't aware of this, but Denali KidCare is Medicaid. And over half of the children in Alaska are covered under that program. I think a lot of Alaskans don't realize that. They don't realize that this is Medicaid. When they, even their own child has Denali KidCare, they don't realize that that is SCHIP, that is a Medicaid program. And so it has a huge impact on Alaska when Medicaid, for example, both adults and children. And so as the caller pointed out, these programs are really important to Alaskans. Our organization serves a lot of individuals who have Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance, self-pay. We serve anyone in the community, regardless of what type of insurance they have. But Medicaid is a really important resource for a lot of Alaskans, both for their primary health care and physical health care, and also their mental health care. As the caller pointed out, And this is just kind of a piece of public education. That's particularly, it's true everywhere in the country, but it's particularly true in Alaska because we have a robust SCHIP, Children's Expanded Health Insurance Program in Alaska, Denali KidCare. And so these are really important things for Alaskans to be advocating because it covers a lot of Alaskans and helps them get the essential care that they need.
Great. Well, I want to get in, Quavon, a little bit to the Power Center because I know that's your baby. And I want you to be able to kind of introduce that here, and then we'll kind of take another mid-break and finish up the show with the rest of that and some more questions. But Quavon, let's get you involved here on the Power Center. Let's just start off with what the heck is the Power Center?
Yeah, so the Power Center is a youth program that acts as a day shelter or a resource hub for ages 13 to 24. So our transition age range group that we're hitting there. And so our main function pretty much is to just meet the needs of the youth that we serve. So we have a kitchen where youth can, you know, they can make an odd meal there. They can take food home. Like we have food that we get donated to us through food drives, food bank, and people are just able to, you know, take that home if they don't have it. The space also, like our kitchen space, which is fairly new, also gets used for cooking groups, so we'll help youth learn how to cook a meal or how to use some of the ingredients that we have within the kitchen to be able to be more self-sufficient when they're outside of the space. We also offer a space to hang out, watch TV, books, board games, and a space where people can just be together and build rapport with each other. We do have peers on the staff that are actively trying to connect with people to help meet their needs, you know, help find out what level of needs they need to be met for the day or for the week or for the month. And some of our newest additions to the program that we haven't had in the past are showers and laundry rooms, just trying to be able to meet, like, some of those all-around resources that people are going to be needing, especially if they're homeless. That's really one of our biggest focuses of people is, I kind of see it as the needs hierarchy. Like you meet them at the bottom where they just need a warm meal, someone to talk to, you know, clothes, hygiene products. And then that second level, since we are resource heavy, we also do help people get into alternative programs. Like if they wanted to go back for GED, if they wanted to, if they wanted to connect with like a benefit specialist somewhere else where they can sign up for food stamps, Medicaid, just helping these youth like figure out what is the next step. And then the very top resource, I feel it kind of goes intermixed with the bottom, or not bottom, with the middle and the top, but is also referring them to some of our clinicians and, you know, getting them to be able to get help for like mental health and behavioral health issues that they probably have never even had a chance to even explore. And then some of the other aspects are just peer education. So using peers to go into schools and also in-house and then present to other youth about anywhere from how to build healthy relationships, talking about depression, talking about suicide intervention, you know, going pretty much into deep depth with some of those issues so that youth that go to the presentation come out like knowing a little bit more about some of the existing issues that other youth are facing and also how to deal with them.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a great overview of the Power Center. We'll get into this a little bit more into the details here. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433. After this short break, we'll continue our discussion on mental health and resources for transition-aged youth with Joshua Arvidson and Quavon Bracken.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Money is generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Joshua Arvidson and Quavon Bracken, and we're discussing mental health resources in Alaska for transition-aged youths. That's age 13 to 23, 14 to 24-ish. Do you have questions about the Power Center, Alaska Seeds of Change, or other resources? Call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433, or email us, line1@alaskapublic.org. Quavon, let's get back into the Power Center a little bit here. We mentioned the kind of the first line services that you guys are offering. So as I understand it, this is a place where kids of this age, particularly challenged youth or homeless youth, you're providing just the basic services. So they have a kitchen, they can prepare food. They have a laundry where they can clean their clothes, internet where they can communicate, and showers to stay clean. All of those things are available at the Power Center?
Yes.
That's fantastic. And then you mentioned kind of beyond that, your middle-level services are connecting them, you know, once I imagine they feel comfortable or they have a safe place per se, you know, the Power Center is, does that help open them up to the willingness to get involved in other services?
Yes. So, so building rapport with the youth that come in over time, it certainly does open them up to being like ready at least to explore other services. Like sometimes you'll have a youth come in and you probably wouldn't just bombard them with like, you need to get this, you need to get that, you know, they're going to sit there, hang out for a second. Just typically what I do, a new youth comes in, I'll show them around the place. I'll let them know all the services that we provide, like just from the base level. And then typically just offering them like, you know, a warm meal or so. And after that, you know, they continue to come back to the center. It's not a super fast process. It's a little slow, but you're just building up that connection with that individual. And then they come in, maybe they'll stay for a presentation. And soon you'll start seeing that they're becoming more active within the program. You know, like they start to use the showers here, start to do laundry, hang out for longer times. And then that's when you're just having general conversation, you know, get to that point to where like you're talking about maybe where they've been sleeping for the last, you know, week or so. And some youth are a lot more outspoken. Some youth will come in and they will, since they might have read about our program, they'll ask, they'll say, I need help getting this. I need help getting into this program. Or we have a youth that had come in before a little bit ago, and they had come in and said that they would like to get into some sort of rehab program. And so that's just like helping them going through like the process with them and looking at applications and whatnot is something that we certainly will do with the youth.
Sure, sure. And what are the main demographics of the patients or the youth that you're seeing come in?
Yeah, so typically homeless youth that's our biggest population of demographic that we see, youth that are actively homeless, youth that are actively sleeping outside, youth that they will typically come here like every day just to get something like warm to eat. Socks are a big thing, you know, so youth will just come in and grab socks constantly because they're sleeping outside and their socks are getting soaked. So that's a huge indicator, actually, of like knowing like if a youth is homeless without even asking them, if they are constantly coming back for more clothes because their clothes are getting soaked and whatnot, or their backpacks are getting stolen. Huge signs of a youth is sleeping outside or at a nearby camp.
So where is the power center?
Yeah, so the power center is located off of 2601 Arctic Boulevard. It's right across the street from Champs Martial Arts. This is our newer building. We had a smaller building before, or smaller room, same size building just about, but a smaller room that we were in. And this building has more of a street face so that people can, when they drive by, they're able to see our signs better, and people that take the bus routes are able to just see us, and we're not like in a little alleyway, so they can take the bus route and then walk on the sidewalk and have easy access to us right away.
Good, good. And then, like, is this open? Like, when is this open? Do people have? It doesn't sound like there's sleeping arrangements there, but like, what are the hours for people who want to go there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, we don't have an overnight program or anything like that. But our hours are 1 to 5, and we're open Monday to Friday.
Great. And then you're staffed. I mean, there's staff there to help the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, since we are taking the peer approach, we have youth that are within the transition age range. We have youth that come from pretty much all walks of life. Youth that have been through certain, you know, traumatic events, youth that have been homeless, that'll end up working here. And then we find that those are the best to be able to connect with the youth that we're serving because they're able to feel some sort of relatability, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit about funding before, but how is this center, is this a Alaska Behavioral Health run center? Is there state funding? Like how do you guys keep this place open?
Yeah, so we are... through Alaska Behavioral Health. We are a program of Alaska Behavioral Health. But some grants and stuff like that that we do use for, you know, the Power Center funding and whatnot, that I can name off the top of my head are United Way, Maxim, AT&T, Alaska Housing Financial Corp, their BHAP grant. That also allows us to be able to provide, it is called emergency rental assistance. So we're able to do emergency rental assistance for youth that are, like, to prevent them from becoming homeless.
Very
as well
cool.
through some of those grants.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. You know, it sounds like a great program. Joshua, anything to add from an administrative standpoint about the Power Center?
No, I think Quavon covered it really well. Back to where we kind of started in terms of engaging this population. The first time I met Quavon was about 5 or 6 years ago. I tagged along with him for a day, and he was doing training on suicide prevention for youth. And he was at an alternative high school here in Anchorage doing a presentation there. And then I followed him over to Covenant House, and I followed him somewhere else. And I was just kind of blown away by the power of having someone that the youth saw as a peer and someone, you know, close to their age range and who had worked with folks from all kinds of backgrounds and experience. And that's the power of the Power Center. It's like we have embedded mental health services with folks who have a lot of expertise and healthcare services, but it's a youth run and youth managed program. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the best of both worlds where you have an environment where people feel respected and safe and like this is, you know, run by us and for us, but they can also access really high level care. So I think it's kind of a really a beautiful thing.
Good, good. Well, I want to get to this email before we have to sign off for the hour. But this is from Laura at Kids First Pediatric Therapy. How, they're at their practice, they provide a lot of resources for children, but particularly in the younger children. And once kids are getting to the teenage years and 13, it starts to become very, very difficult for them to provide therapeutic services. So I think, as they start to see people and 13 and above who have ODD, oppositional defiance disorder, anxiety, ADHD, autism spectrum, et cetera, they are looking for other resources. So I want to ask you, Joshua, they want to know what's the best way that children and their families can access the resources we're talking about today. Can families self-refer? Do they need referrals? Is commercial insurance accepted or just Medicaid? These are the questions that I think could be useful for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are great, great questions. So in terms of referral, so in some parts of healthcare, as a specialist, you need a primary care referral, for example. In behavioral health, we can take those kinds of referrals, but we're also considered a standalone service as well. So families can actually just call us. So if you're a healthcare provider and you want to link someone to our services, you can certainly give us a call and make a referral that way, but you don't have to do it that way. You don't have to fill out a form or do those sorts of things. You can direct your patient directly to us, and we can provide an assessment and start them with services, and then we'll try to get a release of information if they're willing to do that so we can coordinate our care with the care you're providing as a pediatrician or primary care physician of any sort across the whole lifespan. So that's a great question. You don't actually need a physician referral to come to our services because we'll do an evaluation and be able to provide service. So the second question about what insurances we take really every insurance. So we have providers who are credentialed with TRICARE, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, Medicare, Medicaid, really every insurance that's active in Alaska. We also take folks who are uninsured who are doing self-pay as well. So we can take kind of the full range. The questions about the kinds of conditions that they identified in their question there, those are some of the most common mental health conditions that we treat. And what I would say about that referral from pediatrics to a mental health provider, As the question kind of illuminates there, the time to refer is early. Sometimes providers will refer to us like the day someone turns 18 or the day they're sort of transitioning them to another system. That's why we develop TAY programs, because if you refer a little bit earlier, we can engage them, you know, earlier in that process and serve them in our TAY programs before transition to adult programs. So that's a really good question too, and I think the earlier the better. The other piece, I would say is, The easiest way for someone to get in service is just give us a call or go to our website. They can also register online or come into one of our clinics. We do walk-in most days at most of our clinics. And one of the biggest kind of things that's changed is we've really done a lot around capacity. So we'll serve over 6,000 clients this year. It was 2,000 a year 5 years ago. So if you're hearing like, oh, there's a 9-month wait list and those, that shouldn't be true. I mean, I look at our data every week and we're averaging, we take walk-ins every day. And for a scheduled assessment, if that's what a family wants, a scheduled time, a lot of families need that. We're looking at usually about 2 weeks in most of our clinic locations. So the days of the 9-month wait should be over. And if that's not happening, give us a call and let us know, because we need to fix that. So did I answer all the questions I had?
Yeah, no, I think you did. And we're getting here towards our close time. We didn't get a chance to talk about Seeds of Change, but we will probably do another show on that. We got about 2 minutes left. I want to give Quavon and Joshua maybe a minute to summarize here. Any closing thoughts for the listeners? We'll start with Quavon.
Yeah, I guess my closing thought was, I think this is really important, for like a lot of the stuff that we've just talked about today. I think it's important for everyone watching or listening, to realize the impact that youth programs have on a lot of the youth some of the unseen youth, I usually call them the hidden youth, because I didn't really know that there was a lot of youth that were homeless before I started working here. But there's a huge impact that a lot of youth programs provide. And just want to thank everyone for their support.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for being with us today, Quavon. Joshua, any closing thoughts? And please, if you could, we have a link to some of your services on our website, but if you could provide your website and email address as well, or not email address, your phone number for the clinic, please, please do so.
Yeah. So, our website has really good resources and links to all of our clinic locations and numbers. That's www.akbh.org, so AlaskaBehavioralHealth.org, www.akbh.org. In Anchorage, our adult clinic is 907-563-1000. Our kids clinic is 907-561-0954. And in Fairbanks, both our child and family and adult clinics are 907-371-1300. I know that's a lot of numbers to remember. If you just go to our website, you can find all that. And you can also start the process of getting into services with us online. We have all of our, kind of intake forms and that kind of stuff online. But the easiest way is just give us a call. I guess kind of my final comment for all of us in Alaska is to just think about mental health care the way we think about primary care and general health care. This idea that it's this dark and scary thing, just we got to get past that. Going to see someone for mental health care is just like going to see your pediatrician, your primary care doc. You don't feel good? Go get it checked out. It's not a big deal. And if we can get there, I think we'll be in a lot better place as a state.
No, I agree. And that's a perfect way to end our show here. Thank you, Quavon and Josh, for being with us today. Thanks to our audio engineer, Dave Waldron, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.